isn't this the Cougar Show, he says. This is 87.9. Pirate Cat Radio. This is subversive science. This has nothing to do with cougars. It has to do with subverting the dominant paradigm, right?
Right.
Hey, Kiefer. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a little bit wacky. I did the Common Threads show with Diamond Dave earlier, as I always do every week. Normally we get like 10 to 12 people showing up to get on the air, to do their, you know, their poetry or their story or whatever it is. And this time around we got something like 20 people.
Wow.
Like all clamoring to get on the mic, not only clamoring to get on the mic, but like clamoring to stay there. So, I don't know. Everybody was like really pushy. Like, oh, I just want to say just one more thing. Oh wait, do we have time for one more? Like one more. And I just, oh God, it was exhausting. You know, I don't really get that annoyed about it. You know, I just kind of roll with it. But it's like at the end of it, I was like, I need a nap. Seriously. And I love all these people. It's just like everybody had the same energy today. It was just one of those weird things. Like everybody was like gunning for more time.
It's not a full moon coming up, is there?
I don't know. Maybe the Saturn is diminishing. Retrograde.
Or
some of that bullshit. Okay, we gotta do some news in order to be an official show. We gotta do like some real news. And since I'm taking over Charm School, and Charm School will get in trouble if I don't do news headlines within 10 minutes of starting the show. So that wouldn't be nice for them, because I actually do like their show. I think they're adorable. But I wish they would come back and do their show. Oh well. So the first thing that I kind of liked was in Sweden, they're putting climate-friendly, quote-unquote, labels on foods. Sweden has become the first country to slap climate-friendly labels on food products. This comes from a New Scientist, which sounds like New Age science or something like that, but it's New Scientist magazine.
It's a really good magazine.
Right, but you know, but every time I see the words New Scientist together, I'm just like, what is this bullshit?
So is that kind of like the carbon footprint of the food?
If it's
environmentally friendly?
So there's a couple of components to it. Like one way is one way that they're measuring its climate friendliness is the food producer's use of energy and nutrients. So if they used a whole bunch of chemical-based fertilizers and they before and then they switched to manure, they can earn this label.
I see.
So it's a metric, I guess, of a variety of different factors.
Does it take into account any possible gas production after it's
it doesn't appear that it does, actually.
That seems relevant. Methane's a pretty nasty greenhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. But then again, it produces more manure, so hey. Does it balance out?
Yeah.
maybe it doesn't. Okay, well, anyway. So the next thing that I thought was cool that came out just today was this is from Scientific American. Where exactly does your garbage go after you toss it out? So we don't know exactly, but MIT researchers are trying to find out. No, seriously, we don't know.
We have
I mean,
no
this
idea.
Is the funny thing. Like, you know, yes, we dump it in landfills, but, like, does it decompose? It's kind of. Not really. Does some of it end up in sewers? Does some of it end up in the ocean? We know that it does.
So they're trying to trace it.
They're putting tracking materials on all of the on various pieces of trash.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
What are they using?
Okay, let me see here. Electronic tags that they're hoping as many as 3,000 volunteers in Seattle and New York City will affix to different items that they throw away this summer as part of the Trash Track program.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind
That'd
of interesting.
Be pretty cool.
Yeah, this is okay, so we're talking discarded electronics in particular, according to this. Of course, MIT is curious. But yeah, I'm curious about that as well. You know, like a lot of electronics are basically designed to fail at this point. Like
that's true. Planned obsolescence.
Yeah, planned obsolescence, exactly. And so we generate a lot of electronic trash, and I think about this a lot, actually. We don't have any kind of continuity program for all of the junk that we produce. We are a throwaway tchotchke generating civilization.
Is it computers that have a lot of lead?
I think so. Like solder contains lead, basically. So the stuff that makes circuit boards go.
Yeah.
And it's theorized that this lead that makes in the solder that makes circuit boards go is the generation of the magic smoke.
Yes.
The precious magic smoke.
The smoke test.
So there's a guy at Noisebridge that we were just talking about. Noisebridge is this hackerspace here in San Francisco. It's this fantastic place where, I don't know how many people are actually a member of it. I think possibly close to 50 or so.
Oh, wow.
Not that they would all be there at the same time, but but they're all members. And there's all sorts of equipment that you can play with, like, oscillators and... testers and stacks and stacks of computers and donated old game consoles. And like, I just donated one of my old PS3s that doesn't have a working Blu-ray drive, so it doesn't actually play PS3s.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, we put Linux on it, and now it's we are clustering it together with a couple of other PS3s.
Sweet, the Yellow Dog Linux.
Yeah, did we do that? I don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's the one that's made for that has the cell processor in it, like 3-cell processor.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yellow Dog's the one made for the cell.
Oh,
there might
okay.
be another flavor by now. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. But at any rate, I kind of jumped out. I stepped out of that project as soon as I, was like, hey, here's a PS3. All right, see you later. See you guys later. Have fun. Have fun, kids. Yeah, anyway, why did I get into this? So Noisebridge, one of the guys at Noisebridge created a magic smoke collector, magic smoke recycling device.
Really?
So, yeah, he takes the capacitors off of old circuit boards and just explodes them in a glass sealed, hermetically sealed,
nice.
Thingy.
Right.
And collects the smoke. And yeah, it's a humanitarian gesture, really. Because there's only so much magic smoke in the world, and we're going to need it for future electronics.
Right. Magic smoke.
That's awesome.
I remember when I first started building circuits, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong, and the first thing my professor did was start smelling the board.
Oh, yeah.
What are you doing?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that's what you're supposed to do. When something breaks, just start sniffing it.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah,
Smoking component. The mm-hmm. magic smoke.
And perhaps you can tell, perhaps the trained circuit board sniffing nose can tell what exactly is going wrong based on the smell.
Maybe. So,
like,
out of capacitor,
right? Like a blown out potentiometer might smell completely different from a couple of blown out transistors.
This is true. It all pretty much just stunk. So my nose never got trained.
He was like, "It was boring, actually." That's what I'm trying to say. And my teacher was a nerd.
Pretty much. Not that I can point fingers, but
he's pointing a finger at me.
How many more in a headlines? Is that two?
We got through two.
Two more.
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't read Onion as a valid news headline service, but I'm going to do it anyway, because this is great. Researchers quietly chuckling at placebo group. Is the headline. Researchers at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine were hardly able to stifle their laughter Tuesday while administering a placebo to 25 patients participating in a single-blind trial of an experimental new emphysema drug. Did you see participant number 425? He was like, "I think it's really working, doc."
Nice.
Dr. Luis Rodriguez said to a team of snickering pulmonary specialists, "How gullible can you get? I can't believe those guys think they're actually getting CDDOIM. Although the trial is expected to run for two more months, Rodriguez told reporters that he could almost not wait to analyze the data, compile the results, publish the findings, and see the looks on their stupid faces. All right, Kiefer, it's your turn. Is anything cool catch your eye from this past week?
No.
Oh, crap.
Hold on.
What, you mean I can't just call you up, invite you on a show completely impromptu?
I'm like half hermit, so...
Half hermit, half Hulk.
Right, so it makes it kind of hard to keep up with the headlines.
How much do you weigh now?
I'm just still 230.
Oh, you're just still 230.
So I didn't eat like I was supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm light. 231 is obese for my height, so I fell out of the obese category.
Yeah, but you're not obese.
No.
No. So tell me about the BMI, because a lot of people are calling bullshit on it.
Yeah, that came out.
Yeah.
That last week there was a whole article about that. It's just, it's complete crap, because it doesn't take into account anything about the body structure. It's like, the great point was made, if I told you that I got a bicycle for Christmas, then you know it's got wheels.
Mm-hmm.
But if I told you what I got for Christmas has wheels, you'd have no idea what it is.
Yeah, right.
Well, and the BMI works the same way. I could tell you that I'm obese, I'm like super fat, and then you would know that I have a high BMI.
Uh-huh.
But if I told you I have a high BMI, you wouldn't be able to tell me if I'm fat or muscular.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes into account nothing. It was just formulated to try to come up with a statistic to match the curve of data that they were generating like 200 years ago. It's a really old statistic.
That's interesting.
And the CDC claims it is the best judge of health that there is.
The CDC does.
Yes. So it's kind of embarrassing. I mean, it's extremely embarrassing.
Pretty much everything to do with the management of health and health information in this country is pretty embarrassing.
This is true.
The whole, you know, food pyramid.
Yeah, which makes no sense.
And the precursor to that, the food, you know, those squares.
It should be the food cylinder.
The food cylinder? Why should it be the food cylinder?
It just seems the most symmetric to me.
Huh.
Because it's just one thing stacked on top of the other. And then it's easy if you look at a cylinder to tell what percentage each piece is. Because otherwise you look at a pyramid and the base is huge.
Yeah.
You know, like 75% of the pyramid is only 30% of the way up.
Yeah.
So when you look at the pyramid, it's kind of skewed. You can't really make good sense of it.
Well, they really are trying to tell you that you should eat 6 to 11 pieces of bread every single day.
Right.
And I eat zero pieces of bread every single day. So I guess I'm fucked. Like the base of my pyramid is, yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, that would explain why I'm obese, because I don't eat bread very often.
Right.
According to BMI, I'm obese. Compared to body fat measurements, I'm an elite athlete. So there's some discrepancy there. I don't quite understand. I'm confused most of the time.
Let's see. What's another good little story that we could get into?
So that's... Oh, yeah, the onion doesn't count.
No, the onion doesn't count, so we're only 2 out of 4.
What have I seen this week?
Well, I mean, I could go back to Scientific American, something that I'm interested in, which is evolutionary psychology. According to Scientific American, evolutionary psychology has come under fire. The doubts and questions plaguing the theory of evolutionary psychology have boiled up to the mainstream press. This is really just press pressing on itself.
So what was the gist of it?
The gist is that, evolutionary psychology... talks about how favorable traits during hunter-gatherer days persist in modern contexts.
Right.
So evolutionary pressures that made people choose to exhibit certain behaviors now influence our current psychology. So everybody loves to pull up the idea of rape. So why do we have rape at all? Well, it's because people passed along rape genes, more or less. So-called rape genes. Right, because the cave dwellers who carried rape genes sired more offspring and thus passed on that trait or adaptation to more descendants than those without the trait. So that's why we have rape today.
I think evolutionary psychology, though, is just all conjecture. That's all it could ever be.
Well, yeah, you can't actually go back and rerun any,
Right.
You can't go run an experiment, and you can't... There's no environmental conditions.
Well, there's nothing to even observe.
Yeah.
You know, even current hunter-gatherer tribes, you really can't base anything off of them either.
Yeah. They're all pretty much different and have different amounts of, acceptable violence and things like
right.
that.
We don't even know if rape occurred back then. That could be a product of society.
Yes, exactly. So, but anyway, that's the example that the popular press always loves to pull up to go like, I see. You're justifying the existence of rape. Just making that logical leap. There's this really great book I can't remember who wrote it, called The Mating Mind. Have you seen that one?
I have not seen that one.
It was written a couple years ago. My father's a big proponent of it, but then again, he's into things like The Game, you know, the pickup artist kind of scene. So, who knows? But The Mating Mind is pretty interesting. Goes into the ways in which society is influenced by just mating rituals, and almost every chapter extrapolates the idea of how our like modern society basically reflects is like a complexification on mating rituals, more or less. So one example would be just imitation itself. So what's the reason that rock stars are so popular? Well, they get imitated a lot. And the action of imitating a rock star is both makes you sexy and makes the rock star more sexy. Because the better that you can imitate a rock star, that proves that it proves A, that you are a good imitator, which is a desirable trait.
Apparently important.
Right. And for the rock star, it proves that you are one who is imitated.
I see. So if you're imitating somebody dead, there's pretty much only benefit for you?
I don't know. Is there any benefit to imitating somebody who's dead?
I don't know. Not for the dead person, I wouldn't think.
Not for the dead person, no. Probably not. Although, I don't know, maybe it helps you get posthumously honored in some way.
I see. Well, I was
perhaps
just thinking about that.
No, you know, perhaps that does benefit your offspring, you know, because your estate becomes more valuable.
Well, what about Elvis?
What about Elvis?
Does he have kids?
Priscilla Presley?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, I pay attention to all kinds of stuff like that. I didn't even know Michael Jackson had 3 kids until he died.
I didn't know that either. You know what? You know, the only way that I found out about that is from the flurry of tweets that erupted.
Yeah.
And people were like, who's that kid? That was my first inkling that Michael Jackson had a kid. Because people were live tweeting things that they saw on TV.
And that's
when I shot myself.
Well, I knew
he
had one. Wasn't there a big stink? He like held it out the window for the crowd to see or something like that in Germany.
Did he?
Yeah, and they wanted to. I think that was him. Who knows? I get those people mixed up all the time.
I have no idea. So, anyway.
Was that a real headline?
That wasn't a real headline. No, not really. But
yeah,
because I'm really just looking through my own Twitter feed at things that I thought were cool. And some of them are not as cool as advertised, but that's okay. So, our environment changes and the potential to engage genetic potential changes dependent on the environment. And neuroplasticity appears to be firmly established, and the brain has extraordinary malleability and is able to adapt to different contexts over time. Yeah, okay, so the thrust of this argument against evolutionary psychology is basically my argument for mimetics. That... you know, when you have this framework that includes language and the ability to imitate, and then tools, you know, like opposable thumbs, you've got this like, you know, this dream team of things that not only shape the world but shape your own brain. Here's something that I thought was really cool. I was just talking about this a few hours ago with another friend. The fact that recent research has shown why tools become second nature to you.
Why is that?
Because your brain forms a blueprint over all the things that you use. Like your brain actually extends the blueprint of your body. So your brain starts out with this blueprint of like how your nerves
right.
are all mapped and things like that, and like your limbs and your eyes and things like that, and knows how to use them for some value of knows. You know, I don't really, I'm not going to try to, you know, map out an ontology of that. I'd be spending
right. okay.
hours.
Fair
but
enough.
But when you use a tool for some protracted amount of time, like for instance a bicycle or a car, at first it's like kind of tricky and you're kind of like feeling your way out, but over time you feel like you barely need to think about it, you know. I mean, this is the intuitive grasp that I think I've heard from a lot of other people, that over time it becomes second nature. And what it turns out is that over time your brain actually changes, and it changes the blueprint of where things of your body, basically.
I see. So it forms extensions.
Right, exactly.
It's willing to recognize foreign objects as your body.
Right, totally.
So why is it there's some people that have used a hammer for years and they still suck? That's a pretty simple tool.
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I would speculate that the hammer is such a simple tool, as you say, that you have to have a good grasp of the workings of your own body to be able to to operate it correctly. And a lot of people don't even do that. Like, they don't... A lot of people don't actually have a very good command of their own bodies.
In fact, true. I can see that.
Yeah, just, like, the swinging of an arm in a consistent manner. You know, if you don't think that that's something that you should practice, you won't practice it. You'll think, like, oh, that's easy, and then just keep doing it badly.
Right.
So I think there is some intentionality that has to happen, whatever intention means.
Right. There is no intention.
There is only Zool.
Well, we're just computers. Whatever the inputs are, that's what we do.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about... I was thinking about your actions in response to some kind of stimulus earlier, like the decision to act. I mean, we know that conscious thought is an afterthought, but what I realized is that some conscious thought constitutes the action that you want to take in response to a stimulus. Like, for instance, earlier I was like, my stomach feels weird. I should do a plank, you know, okay. to strengthen those muscles, and then I'll feel better. And I just sat there doing nothing, and I realized that my having that thought that I should do it was the action that I took in response to the stimulus to do that.
Right.
And then I realized, you know, if I actually wanted to do that more often, I gotta short circuit the should, because my brain is forming this behavioral pattern. Does that make sense?
Well, it probably already has formed a pattern.
Right, yeah. It already has happened, yes. Yes.
We have to form a new pattern.
Yes. I have to form a new pattern. Right. I don't know about you.
Because apparently old patterns never go away.
Yeah. Well, never go away? Never? Never ever?
That's what I've been... Because I've been reading a lot on the psychology and pattern forming that goes along with overeating.
Yeah.
And though you can create new patterns to try to circumvent the old overeating patterns,
yeah,
apparently the old ones never go away, is the claim.
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe that intuitively. Whenever I, if I need comfort food, I immediately reach for raisins and dates and carrots, because that's what my mom gave me. Wow. Between the ages of like 2 and 4 when I was fussy.
You're lucky.
I guess, but at the same time, like, there are periods where I've gone through... I mean, I've gone through a couple months of weight gain in certain instances just eating dried fruit.
Wow.
Because of certain stress levels. So it really, I mean, you can still overeat even right. if it's on so-called healthy food.
I know somebody who had that problem with ice cream.
Yeah.
Literally would eat 4 or 5 gallons a week.
No, oh, wow.
I'm like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And they did my diet and said, wow, I must be just one of those unfortunate people that gain weight no matter what. What they didn't tell me is that they were still eating ice cream every day.
Oh, my God. Like, that's not doing your diet.
How can you just lie to me? They just flat out lied to me. They're like, I'm doing everything in your book.
Wow. Dude, what's your book? Okay, well, let's talk about your book.
The Carb Night Solution.
Oh, God, the carb. No.
Not that one?
Dude, you wrote a book.
I've written a couple books.
I know. No, I'm not saying, I wasn't saying like, no, not that book. I'm saying like, oh, the Carb Night Solution. No. Come on. You wrote a cool book. You wrote an awesome book. Let's talk about your book.
It needs to be updated. That's why I always give that response.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've learned more, and there's more research to hone it in a little bit.
Because there's a reason we have awesome conversations, which is you've got a master's of physics kind of science-y background, and then you're way into bodybuilding. You're not obese. And you wrote a book about diet that works if you follow it and doesn't work if you eat ice cream all week.
Correct.
So what works?
What works is not... Well, if I tell people, they're not going to buy my book.
But...
You're ruining don't my you marketing have, potential.
Aren't the basics, like, basically in the first 5 pages on your
all
website?
Right. Yeah, there are. So, you basically just don't eat carbs all week long. You keep it really low, like 30 grams or less.
I
think that's equivalent to, like, 5 saltine crackers a day.
Yeah.
Or the carbs. And then pick one day on the weekend, starting, you know, in the afternoon, 3 o'clock, noon... For the rest of the day, eat all the carbs you want.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of carbs.
Okay, so this is on the 10th day?
So there's 10-day introduction because it takes about 10 days for several hormonal changes to take place.
Uh-huh.
And also for your brain to start using fat-derived chemicals for energy.
Hmm.
Usually it loves glucose. That's why everybody says that you have to have sugar to live.
Oh, uh-huh.
Which is complete myth.
Well, you don't have to eat sugar to live, but your brain has to get some sugar.
Actually, it doesn't.
What do you mean?
It's a myth. Your brain can subsist solely on ketones.
Oh, okay.
Which are fat-derived chemicals.
Oh, I see. And that's, ketosis is the thing that the Atkins diet is always talking about, right?
Right. But also they discovered recently that several types of cells in the brain can actually burn fatty acids, which is a very recent discovery.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, so several, do you know where that research comes out of?
I couldn't tell you the journal.
All right, we'll look it up. We got to do...
PSA?
Yeah, we got to do a PSA.
Those are my favorites.
Those are your favorites. What should we read? Let's see.
I liked that, what was it, Shaken Baby one?
Shaken Baby Syndrome?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, let's do something else.
Don't shake.
You know what? I'm going to do this one. Peanut butter and jam. Jam. Peanut butter and jam, because it's got two M's in it, is a nonprofit that provides free... weekend music sessions for all children, but especially the underserved community living mainly in the Tenderloin and the Mission District. Children learn to experiment with different instruments as well as work with local, national, and international musicians in weekly music clinics. They also learn to record their music, design and create their own CDs, and market them to sell. Oh, that's cool. For more info, go to pbjamm.org. This public service announcement has been brought to you from your friends at Pirate Cat Radio 87.9 FM. And FYI, we are 87.9 FM in LA, 104.8 in Berlin. And if you go to piratecatradio.com on the web, you can find our stream. And so I'm doing Subversive Science Show. I'm sitting in for Charm School, and I'm DJ Prefect. And you can find me on Twitter as DJ Prefect. And so if you have any comments or questions or suggestions or swear words, you can send them there. We have a new phone number. This is cool. So Google Voice offered our radio station a phone number. Even though several prominent Twitter personalities have not received them and are indignant, but Pirate Cat Radio has one, and it's the number is 510-PIR-8-CAT. So it's Pirate Cat, but it's a 510 cool number. I don't know why, but that's, you know, that's fine.
Maybe
we are in
excess of those.
Yeah, but you know, if you're worried about the long distance charges, because it is the East Bay, 510 is East Bay, you can still call our original number at 415-341-1199. All right, I'm going to go to a quick break. We'll get us some coffee and stuff like that and come back with a little bit more random science-y talky stuff. Cool. 87.9 Pirate Cat Radio. Pirate Cat Radio. We are 87.9 in LA, 104.8 in Berlin, and we are sitting here talking about how to use the intern here that we weren't expecting on having. The intern is offering to go kill someone, but you have to do it within the time allotted, which would be how much time do we have left now? A little less than an hour. So can you get over to the East Bay and there's this guy? Oh, mumble, 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 mumble. Mumble back room, blah, blah. okay, but he's done something very nice, which is pull up an article off of, what is it, CNN.com? Right, about how the Obama approval rating has fallen below 60%. Now, I don't really have a lot of perspective on politics. Like, I tend to stick to science because I dig it and it's fun. And I think it improves the world. But I think it's really interesting the fact that we care about the approval rating or about the accomplishments of a president like not even half of a year in. Actually, I guess it's a little over half of a year in, right? So Obama sets out with all these goals that are kind of far-reaching, kind of profound. Kind of massive. Like, let's revamp government so that we can actually improve people's lives and improve education and healthcare. And oh, yeah, let's start talking about universal healthcare and things like that. Like, total reversal. of the previous 8 years of administration, and people are like, he's so disappointing. Right. I'm so disappointed in Obama's lack of accomplishing anything. Like, dude is the first guy who's the first politician besides Ross Perot that I've ever heard talk about solving problems in a manner in which it's like, let's all get together, sit around at a table and like figure it out, as opposed to I have the answers, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, Jimmy Carter actually.
Yeah.
His final speech, and that's what guaranteed that he wouldn't get reelected.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was already in the crapper anyway, but I guess he didn't really have anything to risk, but he was like, America, we're headed down a shitstorm road here, and we need to do something about it. And of course, nobody wanted to hear that.
No. People would just want to hear like, rah, rah, what are we doing now?
Right.
Like, what's the plan?
Right.
We're going to this bar, right? Come on, let's just get in the car and go. Come on. That's what people are, you know, are doing. I'm not wearing my glasses. I really should be because I can't read this far away. In early June, Obama's average approval rating was 62%. It dropped a point to 61% in mid-June and stayed at that level through the rest of the month. And now is it 60%? Wow. Yeah, he's gloom and doom for Obama.
Yeah.
I love the news. It's so irrelevant.
Well, what's funny is I have a friend. You know, he's a bright guy, engineer, but unfortunately he'll only watch Fox News. So he's always coming up with this crap about Obama, and he's like, I can't believe Obama's going to raise taxes and do this and this. I'm like, hello, we are in the shitter because of your favorite president from the last 8 years. Somebody's got to pay for it.
Right.
Even his own administration said, well, somebody else can pay for it when asked what we were going to do with all this overspending. He goes, well, let someone else worry about it. Well, guess what? We're the someone else 8 years later.
Yeah, right.
It's not Obama's fault. How do you fault the guy who's got to pick the dog shit up off the sidewalk?
Yeah, isn't it fascinating the way people think that what's happening now has anything to do with what people are doing now?
Right.
Like, effects don't carry out past, you know, a week or a month or something like that. People just assume that, if you make a decision, like if a president makes a decision, like, oh, okay, bam, it's happened, you know,
right.
Which... or the like the housing crisis and things like that. We had economists and PhDs, like people going for their PhDs, writing dissertations about housing bubble crises and stuff like that 2 years ago. You know, this was not an unforeseeable outcome. You know, people who have the attitude that you can make predictions in some certain way, and you can see the effects of things on a, you know, somewhat longer basis than like a week from now, a month from now, and things like that. We're talking about housing bubbles and the subsequent ravages of that sort of economy after it all comes crashing down. They were talking about that 2 years ago. Yeah.
I can't even remember. It was, who was the candidate? Gosh, some independent. I can't remember his name now.
Ew.
But during the Bush Herman Munster presidential race, I can't even remember his name anymore. Wow.
What? Herman Munster?
Yeah, he looked like Herman Munster, the guy who ran against Bush.
Okay, speaking of which, apparently the guy who played Gomez is going to come be here at Pirate Cat at some point. Did you hear that?
What?
Yeah, I just heard about that. Like
Gomez from...
Yeah, Gomez that, like Adams, like from the original show.
Really?
Yeah, and he and like Patty Duke are going to be coming by Pirate
Cat. I
thought
he was dead.
Dude, I thought you were dead. No, they're going to come. They're going to come by. You know, this might be the perfect opportunity to announce some more stuff that's going to go on. So right after Hijacked Charm School, which is right now, which is my subversive science show, we're going to have the comedy show with Casey. And that's from 10 p.m. to midnight. And after that is Psionic Dehesance, the most mispronounced name in Pirate Cat. But we love DJ Yuri G. We love him. He's doing an interview with Dr. Mehta. I can't remember. I think he pre-recorded an interview with someone from Iran. And that's going to be on from midnight to 2 a.m. And then I don't really know what's happening after that. Where happened to the calendar? This place is crazy. It's crazy. Deviant Ninja is on Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. is doing Gregory Solis, the author of Rise and Walk. Over the Line with Uncle Mike show from 4 to 6 p.m. Charlie Tuna. Oh, Charlie Tuna. Is that... Should I know that? Jurassic 5. Okay. Charlie Tuna was a DJ, says the large ranting Jason from the cafe. Sanguine Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. We're going to be doing the Lumerians interview. Sunday, July 19th. 0700 from 7 to 9 a.m. is Colin Williams. And on Hard Candy from 3 to 5 p.m. We've got Knuckle Driver. Bam. And I want to re-announce that our new number here is 510-PIR-8-CAT. Pirate Cat. 510, it's Nice Bay number. We got that from Google Voice, which means we can do, like, analytics on incoming callers and other ridiculous stuff that we'll probably never use, but you've been warned, listeners, so you will be noted, and I got nothing. Dope! what else? What else is new and interesting? You got something?
I was just looking up some headlines, but...
Oh, yeah?
See if there was anything... possible cure for muscular dystrophy.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. Well, that's the most exciting thing. Oh, delinquent behavior among school boys is contagious.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's not surprising.
No, it's not at all.
It's like the mob mentality.
And it's like the obesity thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like if you're
fat, you're fat.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've been hearing that for a couple years, yeah. At least.
Well, at least they proved that. That's true.
Right. That's pretty interesting. I just like to see further confirmations of things that basically show that we are all cellular automata. Like
on the grand scale of cellular automata, right?
I just mean that...
we could just be automata.
Okay, yeah, right. I don't mean that... Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, like, if you see each human as the cell in the system of cellular automata, that... When you're mapping social behavior and psychology and things like that, yeah,
okay.
You're like, you guys can't see him. He's just like looking up and grinning at me. He's like, I totally derailed you, dude.
Exercise your brain. It's good for you. We know that.
Well, you know, I just did a 5-minute talk about that yesterday at Noise Bridge.
Oh, is that what your talk was?
Yeah,
about?
Okay. Yeah. It didn't end up being about kombucha at all. I ended up titling my talk "You're Doing It Wrong." Subtitle was quit hacking, go outside and play, take a nap. Yeah, just using recent neuroscience research from really the past 12 months. Building on previous research, obviously,
right,
but
right.
In the past 12 months, we've seen some consolidation of a lot of neuroscience research that says that, for instance, taking a nap is a lot more beneficial for you, both productivity-wise and awakeness-wise, than drinking coffee.
So the 3-hour naps I take in the middle of the day are good?
Well, actually, the research by the UCSD researcher, what's her name, Sarah, gosh darn it, I'll have to look it up in a second. But
you're worse than I am.
I know, it's terrible. And the worst thing is that I've noticed that with female scientists, I always remember their first name. I never remember their last name.
So with male scientists, do you remember their last name?
I tend to remember their last name. Huh. When it comes to male scientists.
That's interesting.
Yeah, like there's a psychologist who was doing work on implanted memories. And I can only remember her. She's a PhD scientist. I can only remember her by the name of Elizabeth. Like I know her first name is Elizabeth.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. Anyway.
I saw something about that with post-traumatic stress syndrome.
You're saying I have PTSD?
No,
that's
no,
what.
No. That,
all right.
It's something like 20% of all cases never happened. The person never experienced the event that they're experiencing trauma over.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
amazing. We can come back to that a little bit later. But there's a woman who wrote a book. I think it's just called Take a Nap. And it's kind of a cool book. It's a popular science book. So if you go to... Yeah, Dr. Sarah Mednick. Okay. UCSD sleep researcher. And she wrote a book called Take a Nap with an exclamation point at the end. And her research was really cool. It takes a look at... the measurable effects of taking a nap, like before and after, and you're mapping your productivity levels and things like that in comparison to the caffeine response, you know, the response to, right. you know, the typical cup of coffee type of caffeine, and shows that pretty much across the board, you're doing yourself a lot of harm by trying to fix awakeness problems with caffeine. So we're not talking about fitness potential, anything right, like right, that. Right, we're right, just right. talking about awakeness and productivity. And what she found further is that you can actually take different types of naps, like sculpt your naps.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take 20 to 30 minute naps at certain times of the day or when you're feeling certain ways and in the presence of like either silence or music, things like that influence whether you're going to have sleep that promotes creativity, sleep that promotes logical thinking. And I mean, it sounds really woo-woo, but... you can see based on like the firings of different parts of the brain, like what
right.
type of potentials are going to happen, you know?
Well, I mean, the body or well, everything about us is like one big machine. Given the right inputs, you'll get the right output. So, I mean,
something like that. I mean, I think of it as basically like, you know, gestalt. So we've got this gigantic, it's not that gigantic, very dense neuron system, you know, dense nervous system, and your brain is more than just your brain. Your brain is like, you know, that gut brain thing in your stomach, and
right.
it goes all, it's all the way down to your toes, you know. Earlier I was having a conversation with my friend Jason about why I don't do full-time programming anymore, and I just, it came down to the fact that I don't like sitting.
That's why I quit.
Yeah. And you should talk to him then, because he was like, I don't understand your perspective. Why would you give up $90,000 a year? And I'm just like, I was physically unhappy.
It
like,
wrecks your body.
Yes. It wrecks your body and it wrecks your brain.
Yeah.
And when if you see those two things as disassociated, as I did for a really long time, then yeah, you can keep on doing it forever and keep wrecking your body and your brain. But if you right. see that your body is connected to what you are actually doing, or your brain is connected to what you are sitting there physically doing,
right.
you can't keep doing it. You know, as soon as you make that connection, you're just like, shit.
Did you read Proust was a neuroscientist?
Yes, Jonah Lehrer.
Yeah.
Yes, he's one of my favorite dudes. He did another long article about taking naps.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking...
He's got a great blog.
I don't know if you remember in there, but he... he made the point about how some people don't get the correct physical feedback from their body like others, and they
yeah.
lose the ability for logical thought. Like A implies yeah. B and B implies C. They uh-huh. can't, they cannot make the jump
yes.
that A implies C.
Right.
They just lose that ability. I mean, it's interesting to me that Descartes had it totally wrong. I think therefore I am, you know, that the brain was the center of everything and it's
right.
the center of nothing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Losing your center really genuinely is a lack of balance.
Yeah.
And that's why I love words like resonance. Mm. You know, like this idea really resonates with me. You know,
right.
it goes beyond just the, you know, again, like the woo-woo, like new agey type thing. It really genuinely is like you receive a thought or you think a thought, things like that. And to feel it, I mean, to have that thought and to have it work with you, I guess, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word, is honestly a resonance. It's a wavelength or a series of wavelengths.
I haven't given you that book yet, have I? Where
Which?
Mathematics Comes From?
Nope.
By Lakoff, George Lakoff.
Oh, that's a Lakoff book?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It is.
He's another local.
It's
crazy. We've just been talking about California researchers this whole time without even intending to.
Right.
Which, yeah.
I wonder why that is.
I wonder why we're here living in the Bay Area. Mm.
I have no idea. Maybe I should go back to the Midwest.
Go back to the Midwest. Is it?
No.
I don't know. No, I think... But you yourself could be more stimulating to the locals.
Right, but at a cost.
At a serious cost.
My language skills just basically disappear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, so where are we going with that? I don't know. Something about...
I think we derailed each other.
That's all right. That's all right. It started with Obama.
Well, actually, that segue started with... what's his name? Oh, that boys... That whatever rambunctiousness is contagious.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah, the idea of behavior itself being contagious. Yeah. So I guess most of society has this concept that you're either you've got genetically predisposed behavior, or your parents raise you to be a certain way, and that's true to a certain extent. You're never going to disentangle these things.
This is true. Yeah, you always resonate with those early onset patterns unless somebody helps you change them.
Yeah. So did you get anything more from that article?
No,
you're just like, no, yeah, duh.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Couldn't have figured that one out 30 years ago.
There was a good podcast by Dr. Monty Ladner, who used to be a general practicing physician and then went on to be a sports coach and then started, I guess he got disillusioned with being a medical doctor in general, the myopia of medicine because they don't pay enough attention institutionally to recent research. Anyway, I'm just setting you up because it's a podcast that he used to do called Fitness Rocks, where he talks about how in one of these podcasts he talks about how obesity is not addictive, obesity catches.
Yeah.
You know, if you spend your time mostly around people who are obese, your chance of obesity goes up by, I think, 30%.
Yeah, something extreme.
Yeah, yeah. And people who spend most of their time around people who are obese have a higher BMI than people who don't. Mm-hmm. So, right. And you're like, well, what do you mean obesity catches or whatnot? But it's, you know, if you think about it, if you think it through.
Secondhand fat.
So did you coin this expression?
No, unfortunately. I thought I did, and then I did a Google search, and it was actually in the Wall Street Journal and Psychology Today.
Oh.
Both before me, so.
Are you sure? Maybe, but did you read it there?
Huh? No, I didn't.
Well, then you coined it.
Well, not really. I wasn't the first. You've got to be the first.
I don't know. I mean, people keep coming back with, keep saying about, who's that guy who also came up with evolution? Right?
Right.
I mean, I can't remember his name, so that says something about his, you know, his
right.
prospects.
Right.
But
so that'll be me. Who is that guy?
Is that guy came off
the other guy? It's just
that's
like,
okay.
Who's the other guy that invented calculus besides Newton?
Oh, I don't know.
You
do
have
you?
No idea.
No. I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of other guys.
Leibniz.
Leibniz? Yeah.
Independently. Actually, the notation we use for calculus today is his notation, not
Newton's.
Oh,
I didn't know that. So, shows what I know.
And they were both extremely, extremely religious. They thought calculus was proof of God's existence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. I don't really see the argument.
Well, their argument was that since there are these laws that you could discover that governed everything and everything ran like a clock,
yeah,
that proved that there must have been somebody that wound up the clock and let it go.
Oh.
And didn't need to interrupt anymore.
I see.
It was a time when miracles were kind of seen as a problem with the whole God idea, because that meant God couldn't have been perfect because he had to step in and perform miracles, which many screwed up. You know.
Yeah.
So they thought, hey, we just proved that there weren't miracles kind of thing.
Right. But it doesn't really solve the whole, like, you know, okay, so if we have this Big Bang, where did the Big Bang come from? Like...
Right.
We're still not really any closer to describing where existence came from.
I don't care how vehemently scientists say they don't have faith, the atheistic ones.
Yeah.
They have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You have to. Yeah. You
Brian
have to...
Green, perfect point.
There's every creation story has a hard swallow. And the hard swallow of science is, you know.
This is even true for some people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. anyway, I can come back and talk about my talk a little bit more. I mean, I only got five minutes.
You should, what?
I only got 5 minutes yesterday.
So why don't we talk about it now?
Because we're falling behind on PSAs.
Ugh.
And we got to do the rules.
All right.
We got to do the rules.
Get on that.
Get on this shit.
I can't believe you're bringing this show down.
I'm totally bringing it down. But I think you're going to bring it down in a second. As soon as I find an appropriate PSA. You're like... Great. Why did I come here again?
So wait, this used to, at one time, the show, the time slot that we were in was like the Cougar Show or something, right?
Charm School, please.
But isn't the DJ or the host of that Cougar is part of her nickname or something? I swear I saw that. I'm not making it up.
No, I mean, you probably, I don't think you are. And I think that, I mean, the fact that I'm allowing you to call it the Cougar Show
says
something about the fact that I think that they are cool with that. That whole epithet or not epithet, you know, whatever.
Right.
Okay. I've got a hilarious one that I'm going to throw your way. A hilarious PSA, I think. Oh man, that's not what I thought it was. Projective individual. Here. Read that and like it.
Project Open Hand. Project Open Hand programs include meal, grocery, and nutrition counseling for people with symptomatic HIV and AIDS, congregate lunch and nutrition education for people over 60, and meal service for homebound and critically ill people under the age of 60. Services are available to eligible clients in San Francisco and Alameda counties, regardless of their race, color, national origin, gender, sexual orientation, religious affiliation, or ability to pay. For more info, go to openhand.org. This PSA brought to you from your friends at Pirate Cat Radio, 87.9 FM. And this one was funny?
No, I thought I had a funny one, and then I was just like, that's not funny at all.
I was kind of, wow, if this is funny, I'm like really depressed now.
Well, then stick around, because there's more coming at the, on the comedy show right after this, right after Subversive Science here on Pirate Cat Radio, 87.9 FM. You can find us at piratecatradio.com. You know what? I'm going to take a little break and get back to that chai infused with espresso that I just made for myself and abandoned because we can't.
Dirty chai.
Dirty chai. Is that what? I don't like that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I've actually never known anybody else to drink one.
Oh, wow. So that's my new favorite drink.
Yeah.
I'll make you one if you come down. Yeah, 21st in Florida. I'll make you a dirty chai.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to find a better word for that. All right. Anyway, 87.9 Pirate Cat Radio. Bye.